Delicious meat, nutritious. Crack into a good source of protein with tasty, healthy, Wonderful Pistachios. Wonderful Pistachios is a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids. In fact, each 1 ounce serving of Wonderful Pistachios contains 6 grams of protein. Pistachios have got to be the tastiest nut. Pistachios are delicious, they pack a nutritional punch, and are oddly fun to eat. It's like a little dopamine drop every time you hear that shell crack open. Personally, I like them roasted and salted, but you can find your favorite shell or no shell variety at WonderfulPistachios.com. Whether you are running between meetings or dropping off the kids, Wonderful Pistachios are the snack that works as hard as you do. Check out WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more about this healthy, tasty snack. Remember when I talked about True Diagnostics' True Age test? Well, I took it myself and the results are in. I found out my biological age, which directly predicts my risk for serious diseases. Here's why that matters. Research shows that if your biological age is even just 5 years older than your actual age, your risk of developing diseases like cancer or heart disease can jump by as much as 30 to 50%. The good news is, nearly 90% of biological aging is in your hand. Yes, it's driven by things like your lifestyle, which means you have a lot of control over it. I was pleased to see my biological age was 6 years younger than my chronological age. That felt like a big win because I've definitely put a lot of time and attention on improving my lifestyle habits so they are more aligned with my health goals. The test also showed a few areas to work on and even pointed out low level of riboflavin or vitamin B2, which plays a huge role in energy metabolism. It's strange because I felt there was something inhibiting my energy, and now I have a simple theory I can test. The True Age test didn't just give me a number, it showed how quickly my heart, brain, liver, and immune system are aging. The test itself was super easy and convenient. I did it from home, no doctor visit or big needles, just a quick, painless finger prick. You send off that tiny sample in a prepaid package, and in about 2 to 3 weeks, you'll get a detailed online report. If you care about protecting your health and want to find out what your real age is, head over to TrueDiagnostic.com and use my code MINDFUL to get 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's TrueDiagnostic.com and use code MINDFUL at checkout to get 20% off. Your future self will thank you.
This begins by defining their terms. The biggest error I see people making in this arena is conflating purpose and mission. Purpose is existential. It's literally why you're here. Why do you exist? That is the definition of purpose. Mission is strategic. It's what am I doing about it? And you'll have many missions in your life. I'm going to climb this mountain. I'm going to sail that sea. I'm going to explore that river. I'm going to climb this other mountain. What we'll have typically a mission is about a 3 to 5 year objective.
Craig Filek, thank you for joining me on the Mindful Movement podcast.
So good to be here, man. I really appreciate it. And I was listening to some of your episodes, and aside from having a great podcast voice, you've got just shout out and say, really to all the listeners, if you guys haven't gone and left a 5-star review for Les, I'd love you guys to encourage you to just go do that right now. I just did it and it only takes a minute and it makes a huge difference. I know how hard it is to build a podcast like you have. So any little thing we can do to help Les out, just want to lead off with that.
Thanks. Thanks for the kind words. I don't think I've ever asked anybody to leave a review. Maybe I should do that.
That's why I do it. It's hard to toot your own horn, but I mean, you do such a great job and I really think it's worth getting the word out there more. So I want to encourage everybody listening to just...
I appreciate that. I've never thought of myself as having a good podcast voice either. Interesting. Well, I think this came at a good time. It's funny how the universe works. You're the founder and executive coach of Purpose Mapping, and I feel like I am at a crossroads in my life where I've been, I don't want to say lost, but I've been somewhat fumbling through life in the context of like purpose and meaning and, what do I want to be when I grow up type questions in my mind. And it's just interesting how the emails come through when you need them. So it's nice to have you on. I'm looking forward to the conversation, Craig.
Likewise. Yeah. Just based on some of the other episodes that I've heard you guiding people through, one thing I like to do is I like to actually ask questions of the host and get curious about your life. And so we were talking a little bit before we got started here, and I'm actually, I'm feeling the juices flowing already. I'm curious to dive in with you.
Okay. Well, you're not scaring me. So, I guess, do you want to just do your thing? And I'm open if you want to lead. I mean, I could tell you a little bit why I feel like I've been in this position. And I think other, and I know I've touched on some of these topics on the podcast over the last 6-12 months or so, but my kids, you know, I'm like in the transition of like empty nesting. And I think I really like put a lot of my attention and probably connected a lot of my like sense of self-worth to the act of parenting. And now that their needs have changed and it's like, I don't have that same demand. It's like, what do I do now? There's a little bit of like, I've lost my sense of self-worth of that. And I find that I have a lot of time on my hands. And one of my, this is another thing that I guess is been running in parallel with that. It goes back a little bit longer, but my primary like job that I've have had over the last 15 years or so has dramatically changed since COVID. And like the brick and mortar business that I worked at, and I haven't been able to, like I threw, it's like a small gym locally. And I remember when I started the gym, I threw myself into it. You know, I said yes to everything and I just wanted it to grow. And I got to the point where it was like a really nice place and I built a little community there. And then it like got shut down. And there's some aspects of like why it got shut down and how it got shut down that really bothered me emotionally. It was one of those things where if I had a different governor, it wouldn't have been shut down. So it was like there's a lot of like politics involved and like policy involved where things were out of my hand. Like I didn't do anything wrong. I just kind of lost my business. And the income and the asset that it had grown into. And it took a while to like lick my wounds from that. But eventually I did. Like for a while I had to like compartmentalize that stress. There were other things to deal with. And I just said, it is what it is. But then when it was time to like open up again and come back and it was like a shell of what it used to be, I didn't have it in me to throw myself in again, the same way. Like I don't know if it was because it was a different stage in my life or I was afraid to get burned again, but I didn't have it in me and I haven't. So it's still open and I still go there, but it's like a little fraction of my time right now. But those things together, like not that I'm not a parent anymore, but like not having the same needs to be a parent, the same demands of it, and not having that business that took up like a good bit of my time and attention has me a little bit like, what do I do now? And reconciling some of those things and like negotiating all the thoughts in my mind. Like one thing that comes up is I wind up doing a lot of different things and then I'll self-judge myself that like I'm not doing something more like with more focus. And then there'll be part of me that says, like, it's okay, except that you like to do a lot of things and there's nothing wrong with that. And I don't know if there's a right answer, but I notice that there's like a battle in my mind, like different narratives, like rattling around, competing for position of what things should be. And it,
do you feel like you're drifting?
Drifting. That's an interesting word. Sometimes I feel like I'm drifting through the days. Almost like a little Groundhog Day action where like every day is the same. And I enjoy the things I do in my time, but there's definitely something missing. Sometimes I'll think about taking one of the things I do and devoting more of my time to it, but I don't have the desire. Like I have hobbies and it's like, should I make a business out of this? And I'm like, well, I like doing it, but I don't want to do it all the time. Mm-hmm. If I do it all the time, I might not like doing it anymore. Yeah.
You know, the question that I help men answer is, now what? What's next? And I hear this story every day, multiple times a day. Men come to me and they're like, I could literally do anything if I just knew where to focus. I also think, you know, I have a 24-year-old daughter who I intentionally raised to launch. You know, Montessori through sixth grade, she is on her way, clearly on her mission, knows how to handle her own finances, knows how to, you know, she's just competent and she doesn't need me. And I think nobody prepares us for what a radical departure empty nesting is from what we've been doing for the previous couple of decades. And it can hit our nervous systems pretty hard. And when you start to combine that along with a lot of men are facing mortality, either through health, personal health stuff, or certainly folks getting older. And the perfect storm of all that is what a lot of us would consider to be the midlife crisis. Who am I now? What do I focus on now? We're not 20, 30 years old anymore. We can't throw ourselves into work and projects the way we used to be able to. It's a different walk. It's a different pace of life, and it's a different focus with more wisdom. And I just want to start out by acknowledging how confusing and sometimes even a little bit frustrating it can feel. And I think a lot of men, I think most men end up in some version of this in midlife.
Yeah, I guess it's really common. Do you think it's this different for men? I mean, do women also have some type of common midlife crisis or transition?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm, you know, my background is 30 years of men's work.
Okay.
And I would never pretend to know what a woman's experience is. But what I hear is, you know, they're devoted mothers for 20, 30 years, and then suddenly the kids don't need them in the same way. And so that empty nesting, I think, hits women equally.
Same but different.
Yeah, same but different, right? But it means something different to them, and they process it differently. And it, you know, they're going through hormonal changes, which we do too, but not nearly to the degree that they are. And then depending on what they've done career-wise, you know, there'll be some shifts. But I think there's a wisdom that starts to set in that we didn't have in the first few decades of our career. And there's a spaciousness. There's an openness to possibility that can feel unnerving because our culture is so driven by cortisol. Do, go, 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 build, climb. And then you get to the top of what I call Success Mountain, where you've checked all the checkboxes, and it's kind of like, all right, now what? Like, I'm not going to climb another first mountain. And most men don't realize that there is a second mountain. It's usually hidden in a fog. It's off in the distance. And we're so used to an orientation of upward that anything that feels like it's taking us down is terrifying. But from a Jungian perspective, going down into the cave, going down into the dark forest between, you know, in the valley between the two mountains, that's actually the path. And that's where, you know, Dante's great poem starts. You know, I, in midlife, I came upon a wood, a dark wood, and had to go through it. And nobody wants to go through, especially in America. It's like, no, shine brighter, climb higher, go, you know. But that's not actually what life is calling for.
So climbing the second mountain from the top of the first is not the natural way.
You can't, I mean, how could you do that? It's not, it's just fundamentally not the way things work. And a friend of mine calls it the midlife chrysalis, which I think is beautiful because a caterpillar doesn't just zip up into a cocoon like a tent and put on butterfly wings like some raver chick at Burning Man and then pop out and say, let's party. Like, there is a deconstruction process that happens. So what's fascinating is, I'm gonna do a little science presentation right now. Inside of a caterpillar's body, there is a type of cell that they refer to as imaginal cells. They contain the image or the architectural blueprint of the butterfly. And they're there the entire life of the caterpillar. But the caterpillar-ness, I was a philosophy major, so the nature of the caterpillar expunged those cells like pathogens. They did not fit the pattern of being a caterpillar. And then when the caterpillar goes into the chrysalis, it starts to melt down, it starts to kind of dissolve and disintegrate and turn into caterpillar snot. And at a certain point that I refer to as maximal dissolution, there's no more breakdown that can happen. Those imaginal cells kick in and they start to take over. And they start to, almost like cancer, they start to grow and reorganize the caterpillar snot into what becomes the butterfly. And then the butterfly still has to squeeze out of a little crack at the end of the chrysalis, which squeezes the water out of its wings. And then it comes out on the branch or the rock or whatever it is, and the wind and the sun dry its wings, and next thing you know, it's flying. And it never saw that coming. Here's the kicker. The human heart contains imaginal cells. And so if we don't allow ourselves to go through the disintegration of, okay, my identity as a father, as a provider, as a producer, if we don't allow that identity to go through the natural disintegration and reinvention or evolution, however you want to think of that, men can get really jammed up. They can get very stuck in a mental ego identity construct of, but I've always been the guy who figures it out. I've always been the guy who saves the day. I've always been the guy who protects and provides and produces. And what does midlife bring us to after that? It's actually a much deeper, more authentic version of ourselves that's always been there. It's always lived in our hearts. But as boys, we get put on the conveyor belt of provide, protect, right, produce. And we go decades learning how to do that. And it's not always the most authentic thing for us. And I think midlife is a chance to remember and excavate the deeper authenticity in our heart. So I'm curious what happens for you when I reflect that's what's natural.
It's interesting, like the idea of letting some of those identities dissolve is not something I've really approached yet. I mean, I don't, you know, obviously I'm not going to let fatherhood dissolve. I mean, I still am the father of my kids. It's just like the roles that I play. I mean, I've gone through a lot of like letting go so that I don't feel as much worry or stress around, are they going to be okay? Questions like that. Because ultimately, you know, you just want them to be okay, whatever that means, happy, healthy. But I guess these are like different, maybe like adjacent concepts. I mean, they're related, but they're definitely not the same. So like laying down those parts is different than like letting go of whatever the gripping or the fear of them not being okay. Or did I do enough? Did I instill enough love? Like, was I enough? Was I a good enough father? Essentially, was I a good enough father? So that's interesting. I'm still a father, and can I let those components of fatherhood, like I guess, be dissolved in the chrysalis or whatever, and let it maybe feed the shaping of whatever is next? But definitely feel a little like I have no idea what I would want to do next. You know, I know I like service, but when I think of the different way, every time I think of something I like and I think of expanding it, it like I get turned off by it. Like I don't know if it's the fear of the responsibility. I've always been one to curate my schedule with a lot of intention. For some reason, I learned at a very young age to really value time, that is the most valuable resource. Like I have friends that are just so, like, from an external observer, they're just way more successful. But when I talk to them, I don't get the sense that they're as successful as I am because they have a lot more stuff, but they have like a lot more responsibility and a lot less time. And I really value the time. And that's maybe that's a blessing and a curse. I feel like valuing time the way I have has really helped me in a lot of ways. And it's allowed me to connect with like the most important things to me, which was the ability to spend time with my kids and to spend time and be there making the dinner for everybody. But it's also a curse because it's like I'm reluctant to commit time to do the next thing. So I'm doing like lots of little things where they're, none of them are like really big commitments. Like this podcast is not a big commitment. It's like a fun side hobby. It's, you know, not the main thing paying the bills, but I enjoy it. And I, you know, hope that I assume that somebody's getting helped along the way as they come along for the ride for some of these conversations. I assume there's something good happening. People do come back and keep listening. And like the gym I still have, but it doesn't take a lot of time. It's still service. I still go and help people, but not anything close to full time. And then I've got a couple hobbies, but it's like all these like micro jobs. And it's like there's a, I don't know if it's a fear of commitment because I've just learned to value my time so much. But then I get myself in a rut where like I have a lot of time on my hands and I really don't know what to do with it. And it's, you know, this is obviously a very privileged thing to be able to say.
Yeah.
You know, it's like some people be like, the fucking nerve of this guy to first world problems. Yeah, but like, I've curated, I've spent a lot of time making decisions based on how I value time. And now it's like, well, look at what you've like painted yourself in a corner in a way.
Well, it's part of the identity. You know, if you don't see a clear path forward, it's because you're stuck in an identity that tells you, oh, I can't do that. I shouldn't do that. I don't want to do that. That doesn't really light me up. What I'm hearing is that you're in a, you know, when I think about turning this into a full-time thing, I'm like, nah, it doesn't light your body up. It doesn't naturally lead you forward. There isn't intrinsic energy for it. So I think it's wise to not, I mean, that's what a lot of men do is they'll just go with another mental ego construct project because that's what they've been doing for the previous 20 plus years. And they think that that's the way that they're going to get their dopamine going forward. And the whole point of the Caterpillar story is that, no, there's a whole other way of operating that's not hustling and grinding and climbing, that's actually deeply fulfilling, can be very spacious, really focused on your zone of genius and your purpose, the way you're wired to make a contribution. And that has to, that, it takes time for that to emerge. How old are your kids?
21 and 19.
Yeah, so they're just on the edge of leaving the nest. They have not left the nest yet. It takes time. You know, a caterpillar doesn't just, again, it doesn't just pop into a cocoon and pop out with butterfly wings strapped on. There is a process. And I find it typically takes 3 to 5 years.
Wow.
And it's disconcerting. Because again, we're so in do mode prior to this. And then all of a sudden it's like, well, what do I do? My sense is that you will find something meaningful that you want to put an appropriate amount of energy into as it becomes clear. But I would encourage you to say, if you're not feeling intrinsically drawn from your gut, it's probably just a mental idea that you have of what you could be doing, based on an identity that's still crumbling and trying to hold itself together. And I think your meditation practice and anything that you do to stay in the spaciousness is actually the healthiest practice you can be in.
You mentioned the word purpose. Well, you've mentioned a few times. I mean, do you feel, Craig, that people have like an inherent, like there is an inherent purpose that everybody has? And
yeah,
part it's the of the health that, experience, the human experience is like discovering that.
It's the definite. I mean, I was a philosophy major, so a good philosopher always begins by defining their terms. The biggest error I see people making in this arena is conflating purpose and mission. Purpose is existential. It's literally why you're here. Why do you exist? That is the definition of purpose. Mission is strategic. It's what am I doing about it? And you'll have many missions in your life. I'm going to climb this mountain. I'm going to sail that sea. I'm going to explore that river. I'm going to climb this other mountain, right? What we'll have typically a mission is about a 3 to 5 year objective. And then when we're done, we're kind of done. Career will escalate depending if you know, if you have a business and you're growing it. And it takes somewhere on the order of 10 to 12 years to feel complete with a certain cycle of growth in that regard. And then when men don't know what to do beyond that, they'll either stay stuck on the golden hamster wheel. Like, I don't know what to do. I'm making good money, so I'll just keep doing this, which is really a shame because they're not fulfilling their potential and they know it. They might even feel guilty about it. So then they end up filling their lives with more stuff, a Maserati, a luxury vacation, you know, whatever that is for them. And it doesn't really satisfy, but they don't know what else to do. So the golden hamster wheel becomes a trap. Or they'll end up golfing their way to the grave, or surfing their way to the grave, or getting their pilot's license. You know, you get just enough dopamine from those activities.
And why can't that be a purpose? Like, what is inherently wrong with that if somebody chooses that option?
Because you're not realizing your full potential. And
but who's to say, like, what the potential is? Like, when you say full potential,
you can feel it inside yourself.
It almost, like, implies judgment of some sort.
Do you feel like you're reaching your full potential?
I don't know, because I feel like there's really no solutions. There's just trade-offs. So you could, like, if you pick a direction to go and then you fulfill whatever potential you have in that direction, it was at the expense of whatever other direction you could have chose. So who's
have
to
you,
say
have
what
you
it's
ever been, have you before? Have you ever been in a flow state, like a deep, sustained absence of time?
Sure.
Full presence.
Sure.
So that, I've got a colleague at Cal Poly who went through my process, and he wants to create the aura ring of flow states, right? So if you have an aura ring, you know, you see your awake, light sleep, REM, deep sleep, right? It kind of breaks it out. There are different biomarkers in the brain for individual flow, group flow, which is everybody, you know, we're all watching a game or watching a concert together and it's, whoa, right? There's that group flow. And then there's team flow, which is being in the band, hitting the groove, or being on the team, getting the ball into the net. And what we determined from about 20 hours of deep conversation around this was the highest potential, the highest expression of our potential as, I'll just say, men, is to be in team flow towards a high, hard, meaningful objective. And when we're experiencing going for it, pushing ourselves, you know, flow happens just 4% beyond our comfort zone, what we believe is capable in the direction of something that we enjoy. And when I talk about purpose, we're literally talking about how you're wired. So I had a border collie. And I still watch border collie videos on Instagram. You know, I just love to watch border collies herding sheep. I mean, they're just so, that is why they exist. That is their purpose. You could take them hunting.
They've been designed to do that.
They were designed to do that. That's what I mean by purpose. Now, are they going to get the cattle from the Rio Grande up to Wyoming? That's a mission. That's a big, hairy, you know, audacious goal that they've got to do. And they're fully committed. But once they get there, their purpose doesn't change. They're still bred for that purpose. They just need another mission. And when you're going after a mission, your second mountain in this case, it has to bring your wiring, your zone of genius, the reason you exist, it has to bring it to its full potential. And when you're in your full potential, it's a flow state. And it's not ambiguous. And so when I ask you, are you reaching your full potential? Well, there's trade-offs and, you know, it's enjoyable and maybe you even hit flow and, you know, like podcasts can be fun. You can hit flow. Are you making the greatest contribution you're capable of?
When you say greatest contribution, do you mean like to the world as a whole, like
as a whole or to your community? Just, you know, there's a definition of world. It's like your world, right? But to the greatest good for the greatest number that fulfills you, that satisfies you. Not that you're burning yourself out and grinding yourself into a stump in the ground to do, but this is what I was born to do. I love it. It gives me energy. It makes me want to do it again tomorrow. It makes me want to find other people that want to do it with me and hit that team flow going for something bigger than I probably would have gone for if I was going it alone.
Well, why do you think that there's that team component? Like, why do you feel that you mentioned different types of flow?
Yeah.
Why does it have to be team flow to be the like more meaningful one?
It's a good question. Here's my hunch. My hunch is that we're wired for it evolutionarily. If 100,000 years ago, you could go off on a vision quest, and if you survived and returned home, you were, you know, for instance, a man. It was a rite of passage, right? Or you would do it in whatever frequency. But it wasn't like we're not wired to survive in isolation. We're wired to survive in a pack. We're pack animals. And hunting, taking down a mammoth, that's not something you do alone. You might get rabbits, you know, you might even be able to get a deer. But to really take down something large, we had to do that together. And we did most things together. And I think that that wired our brains into a type of super organism, like ants or bees or a wolf pack. Spent as much time as I can with wolves. I've got two friends that run wolf sanctuaries. And wow. What I'm learning and understanding is that the wolf species is the closest in nature to the human species in terms of our family unit and structure and the way that that plays out. And so I just think that team flow is really about engaging in something that is creates a whole greater than the sum of its parts experience. And then I don't have to do everything. It's like you've got a podcast guy, you've got a tech guy, right? Like you're the host, like you're great at interfacing with people, you're curious, you have a sharp mind. That's part of your zone of genius, your wiring. You could even say your purpose. Getting into the nuts and bolts of the tech and the editing and making sure stuff goes out and all that, not your thing.
My thing.
But it's his thing. And so you two together form a whole greater than the sum of the parts that produce a higher quality product that allow you to each be in your zone of genius. And if you added in 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 more guys, you could grow your capacity to make an impact. And if you're doing, you know, it's narrowing even more down to just the zone of genius at the top of the, you know, there's kind of a pyramid of zone of genius at the top, zone of excellence is next, zone of competence, like mowing the lawn, doing the dishes, you know, it's making the donuts, whatever that is. I can do it, but it doesn't light me up. It's certainly not making a huge impact. And then the zone of incompetence. So don't ask me to do that. I'll just ruin it. But the more we can get into our zone of genius and do that every day, the more lit up we feel. I think that's the equivalent of the imaginal cells in the caterpillar. It's like, how do we breathe life into those? How do we give them more airtime, more bandwidth, and organize our lives? And this is the midlife transition. Organize your life around making that highest and best contribution every day, because it's not just fulfilling philosophically, it's neurochemically saturates our brain in positive molecules, dopamine, oxytocin, serotonin, anandamide, you know, noradrenaline, the thing that brings us fully present into focus, the thing that feels pleasurable, the thing that tells us what we're doing is right and we're on track and do more of it, the thing that says all is right in the world when I'm in this state, and the thing that says, fuck yeah, bro, let's do this again tomorrow. That is unambiguous. And I'm wondering, when's the last time you felt that way?
Ooh, that's an interesting question. I mean, so I have like a few jobs now. They're all like kind of small, like I alluded to. So the job that I've had the most experience with is in the gym. And I do still really enjoy a component of that where I find it very fulfilling. It's the thing that I would do for free. I mean, in fact, I'm so lenient with my time when I do it because I really don't care. Like, I would do it for free. And it's like that beginning like pivot point when somebody comes in, like those first 5 or 10 sessions where we're going over, you know, foundational ideas, like get to know them, talk more like philosophically about what the goals are, look at their habits, look for any like low hanging fruit to see if there's any interventions they're open to dealing with. And then the movement component, like teaching somebody how to connect with the way they originally learned how to move, and then adding strength components to that, and maybe some other like concepts around movement to their routine, just to get them to the point where they're like up and running. Like they could still benefit from coaching, but they could also kind of go on their own at that point if they have the self-motivation. And that pivot point, like where someone's up, like in the middle of a transformation, I find that really rewarding to be like a part of that and be like the guide. And but I don't want to do it all day, every day. And I used to do it a lot. And like you said, you know, you spend 10 or 12 hours and it like completes like a cycle. And I feel like, yeah, I worked that cycle. I did it. And I was in the process of actually selling that business. And then like COVID hit like right then. I desire to keep doing it. Like if somebody calls me, I'll help them. But I don't desire to like start marketing to get as many clients as I and build it. Like that is just has left my body, that desire, even though the act of it, like if somebody showed up and said, can you help? Absolutely. If you're asking for help, I'll help. Like I can't say no to that, you know, as long as, you know, it's a good fit personality wise. But it's a weird thing for me to hold space for those two ideas. Like, yeah, I do love it. I do say, fuck yeah, let's do it again tomorrow, but not 9 to 5 tomorrow. That's where I'm at. So if you were to say, does anything get me? Like, that's the thing that gets me. Or like, I have hobbies that you, like you say, when you finish a project, there is that chemical makeup. Like I've been doing woodworking. I don't sell any of it. It's all like either stuff for functionality around the house or gifts. And I've gotten where I'm not bad. Like I can make some pretty cool stuff. Now a professional will look at it and they'll pick it apart, but the average person is generally wowed when they see what I can make. And I get a lot of fulfillment when I give it away. But I can't just like give away projects every day, all day. That's like my new thing. That doesn't make sense and I won't enjoy it anymore. But there's something about the chemical makeup that you alluded to in my brain, the moment that you're like, here, have this, you know, cutting board for your housewarming gift or, you know, something like that. It's there's something really rewarding about it that I would pay for that feeling. Like, you know, I wouldn't have to do it for money. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. It's beautiful. And I have a lot of clients that's where they come to me and they say, you know, I'm doing all this stuff. It's cool. It's great. And I can feel there's something deeper calling.
So what is the next step of that process? Like if you identify that there's something that you do find really rewarding when you list that you do get a lot of joy and fulfillment out of, but you don't want to do it. You don't want to throw yourself into doing that all the time and make like some other business out of that or more of business. What is the next step in the process?
It's continuing to shed the old identity. And so you can't rush nature. One of my favorite quotes of all time is nature never hurries, yet everything is accomplished. So there are ways to... I guess one of the ways I describe my work is midlife is like a second puberty. You wouldn't choose it. It's kind of awkward, right? Your identity's reforming. All this shit's happening that you're not in charge of. You can't speed it up. You can't stop it. You can't. But you can educate yourself about it. You can understand the process. You can have more. You could call it self-compassion. It's certainly more awareness and understanding of what's going on. Just to calibrate your expectations of it all. And there is a way, I do believe in conscious evolution of consciousness, you know, that we evolved to a certain point where consciousness came online and consciousness can reflect on itself and you can become engaged in the process. And so what I'll do with men is I'll guide them through a series of personality profiles and use that as a jumping off point for conversations about, well, what about that lights you up? Is it the interaction with the guy at the gym? Is it bringing your science brain to, you know, and teaching? Is it the, you know, coaching him to a moment of realization about himself? Is it motivating? You know, there are aspects of it. We would have to laser into the nuances of exactly what it is about that that lights you up. And by using a battery of personality profiles, we would see your purpose, your nature, through all these different lenses. There's a cognitive lens, there's a conative lens, there's a, you know, Enneagram. Conative is how we get into action. So cognitive is how our brains process. So like the Myers-Briggs would talk about 8 cognitive functions, introverted thinking, extroverted thinking, introverted feeling, extroverted, right? These 8 cognitive functions is how the brain hits flow. Conation is, so there's cognitive, conative, and affect, which is more emotional, like how we feel about things. But conative is about how we get into action, how we pop the clutch when we make a decision that we're going to take some action. So some people need to do a deep dive into the facts. Other people need to just start building and prototyping with no sense of how it's going to ever get there, but it does. Right? Some people need to really understand the process before they're willing to begin engaging. And so there's just different ways of getting into action. And so I've studied, I don't know, 20 plus different personality profiles over the years. It's kind of become my wheelhouse. And then I eventually made a Venn diagram out of the 6 that I found made the biggest difference in a man's capacity to understand himself and what puts him into flow, what his purpose is, the thing he was wired for. When we get to the end of the process and we distill it all down into a 1-page strategic plan, every single man says the same thing. I've known that my whole life. Why didn't they teach me this in high school? Why didn't I get to build my career around this? And I'm working with I have a protege who's 20 who wants to bring it into teenage understanding of themselves. But get what you get. And we're here now. And I certainly didn't have anybody giving it to me. I had to, you know, tooth and nail, claw myself through the dark forest to figure out, all right, like making more money is not going to make me any happier. What else is there? And I eventually stumbled across this. I mean, it was just literally something I tripped over accidentally one day and went, holy shit. And then I started doing it with my friends and colleagues and they were like, how did you come up? I'm like, it was just all of these frameworks and tools that I've been immersing myself in just kind of came together and opened this portal into self-awareness. And it's totally replicable. It's completely reproducible.
What are other, like, are there other practices that are part of that program other than the, like, the analytical where you are on the Venn diagram?
Yeah. Thing? Well, right. And this gets back to the chrysalis. Like, I can't speed up nature. So largely what I'm doing is just taking men through a process where I give their mind something to focus on so they're less agitated about it. But the process takes as long as the process takes. You know, when I was, gosh, I must have been maybe 11, 10 years old. I'm not sure exactly where it is, but there are psychological developments. We call them fulcrums. There's a fulcrum at which, prior to which a child cannot comprehend something like, you could say object permanence, which is usually around, you know, 1 to 2 years old, of like you hide the ball's totally gone. Child forgets about it, right? And then it's like, oh, there's the ball again. But then at a certain age or a certain stage of brain development, you hide the ball and the kid wants to look behind your back because they know that it's still there, right? I was up at our lake house with some friends and these two sisters, one was a year younger than me, one was 2 years older than me. And I wanted the tall glass because it was going to have more root beer. And she said, no, it's going to have the same amount as the short fat glass. And I was like, no, it's not. And she poured, and I thought it was going to spill all over. I was getting ready to grab the towel. And all of a sudden it finishes, you know, like three millimeters before it gets to the top of the glass. And I was like, holy shit. And she goes, yeah, it's conservation of volume or whatever she calls that, right? And so there are these fulcrums in our brain and in midlife, like development doesn't stop. I think that's like a total error in judgment that, you know, we get to 21, 22, 25 years old, whatever it is, and then we're just done. We're kind of cooked. I think our identity calcifies and we operate as if we're not continuing to develop, but we are. We're always developing as humans. And so in midlife, there's this, what I call the second puberty. There's a tipping point. There's a fulcrum where you reach that point of maximal dissolution. And, you know, you may, like I might have developed the ability to understand the conservation of volume. And 6 months might have gone by and I never tested it or saw the experiment run that had a click in my brain that, oh, that's a thing now. I understand the world in a different way. It may have been latent in my capacity and untested. And so the work that I do is to really build that chrysalis, build that container and say, look, we're just going to be together in this for as long as it takes. Somewhere along the way, we're going to have that fulcrum that's going to happen in you just naturally, organically. And through that process, we're going to be deconstructing methodically, consciously, deconstructing your identity and looking at how you're wired. Independent of what you think about yourself, independent of the identity that you formulated about yourself, deconstructing it to the components, the fundamentals of this is how Les is wired. And then start to see the Venn diagram of that. And that will create that moment of like the glass not overflowing. And you see, oh, that's me. There it is. But then you still have 6 to 18 months of integrating that and letting your brain rewire around it and having experiences and making choices, but giving your conscious mind the ability to recognize, ah, something is different now. I understand myself differently. Printing that out in a one-page plan and then continuing to use it as a decision-making framework to shape the direction of where you're heading with things. Then eventually your life starts to operate. We'll just use the butterfly metaphor. You're just operating in a different way. You're not crawling around eating leaves. You're flying around eating nectar. It's just a totally different way of operating.
Interesting. Can I, can you discuss maybe an example? Like, and you've been doing this for a while. Like, what's an example of a second mountain that somebody decides to climb after, you know, the year or two in the dark forest? Mm-hmm.
I love the question, man. I'll use this example because he's going public with it. All the work I do is highly confidential. I mean, I'm working with incredibly successful people that don't, you know, obviously want the dark, scary corners of their psyche, you know, revealed. But this guy in particular, this is becoming his thing. He's a real estate investor, probably $500 million in property. And he's got everything. He's got everything. I remember when we started together, he says, I got everything but a plane. But as the recession kicks in, maybe I'll get that too. And he ended up buying two planes, one to fly around in and one to rent. He's got everything. House in the mountains. He loves to ski. House on, you know, literally on the water in Florida where he sees the sunrise and the sunset from his patio every day. And he was miserable, depressed, frustrated, you know, challenges in his family with his kids and his ex and his girlfriend. It just, everything was really hard emotionally. And we've been working together now for, it'll be 3 years in September. And what he initially, what clicked for him was that he doesn't have to constantly be on, because it doesn't have to constantly be in do mode. You know, he's got plenty of revenue coming in and he can take a step and relax. And he says to me all the time still. He says, you gave me permission to chill. Well, that's kind of like the spaciousness you're talking about, right? When our days are just so filled with stress and workaholism and cortisol, there's no room for transformation. And so the first thing was to just create some space for him. And we went through about a year, year and a half of just digesting and week after week, just looking at, okay, I don't have to do this and I don't have to be like that. And, you know, he reconnected with his children, particularly his two older children who were kind of more on their mother's side, and started taking more vacations and just spending more time with his family, spending more time getting his body back in shape. So just slowly integrating himself. And he's at a point now where, well, and then there was another maybe 6 to 9 months where he was like, I don't know what I would do. You know, he's the type of entrepreneur who needs chaos to feel alive. And I was like, you know, man, I'd really love to see you just let the business operate and stop poking the bear. And let's find some other way for you to get your dopamine. So he wrote a book. And he started going on stages talking about men's mental health, coming out of his depression, coming out of suicidal ideation. And getting on stages, like Tony Robbins put him on stage, you know, all these stages. And he's getting all this dopamine from that. And he's like, okay, I can leave the business be, like I can just let it run, like let the first mountain of success just kind of operate and start climbing the second mountain. And he's at a point now where he wants to run the Men's Mental Health Awareness Month in March. So the Men's Mental Health March in March, right? He wants to create that. And he's got Tony Robbins support and he's got, you know, the mayor of Fort Lauderdale, Palm Beach, right? He's starting to bridge this out. He's got people in Boston and it's starting to grow into a movement that he's Polish. So he goes, you know, he's like a rock star in Poland. He wants this to go around the world. That's a second mountain. That's getting the gold out of the shadow in the cave, in the dark forest between mountains, which was not comfortable to go in and face. But he's done it, and it's taken him a few years, and he's slowly shifted his focus from making more money and making everybody crazy in the process to, oh, the money's going to take care of itself. The business can run itself. He's built a great team. He's got everything set. And now he can focus on something that serves the world. It's what Maslow would call self-transcendence. So you got survival, safety, belonging, success, self-actualization, which is not the end goal. It's just kind of a transitional stage to self-transcendence, where the way my clients describe it is, yeah, my life is no longer my own. I'm just here in service of something greater. And that something greater is not something we choose. It's latent within us. It's something coming from a transcendent place, and we're just a hollow vessel stewarding it in the world, which is deeply relaxing. It is not a first mountain hustle and grind type of life. And so what I see in you, Les, is you're giving yourself permission to not stress over stuff. I still like doing the coaching. It's not my 9 to 5. I enjoy building something and giving it to my friends and building stuff functional around the house. Somewhere in the Venn diagram of that, there is a white hot center. It's what I call X marks the spot on the purpose map, where if you dig into that and you give that more bandwidth and expand it, it will bring an intelligence into focus within you that will transform your body, that will transform what you have energy for and give you a clear path to what comes next.
Maybe, Craig. You might be
right.
Keep
me posted. I mean, this is very similar to you with the guys at the gym, and they reach that transitional point where you're like, okay, you're a butterfly now. You can go fly on your own if you're motivated, right? It's the same for me with this. It's like I'm just fascinated by the transformation of men. You know, I really believe that what the world needs now more than anything is good men on a good path to making a meaningful impact with their gifts and talents every day. If we had more of that in the world, I think the world would be a better place in a measurable way.
Yeah, it's you know, it's kind of saddening to think, at least within the culture of like United States. I mean, it seems like throughout my adult life, I've watched, I guess you could call it like the vilification of masculinity, like the part, you know, a lot of the natural drive that men have to go, like, find purpose or apply themselves is muffled in a way, or like a lot of the drive that comes from like that masculine energy.
It's been shamed out of us.
And it's been shamed. Yeah. It's like the culture has done this to itself. You know, it's like one of the many like sicknesses of our culture.
Right. I think it was, I mean, I don't get into conspiracy theories so much, but there are certainly plenty of threads that could weave into this around, you know, creating the necessity of two income households because it increases the tax basis. You know, like if you know, we double the number of people working and, you know, the children get pulled out of the home into state schools and there's just more control. I mean, you could go down that rabbit hole. And I think
weak men are easier to control.
Absolutely. Fluoride in the water. I mean, you know, like everybody listening has heard a half a dozen of these conspiracy theories. But I also think that there was a genuine intention to improve our lives. And the Industrial Revolution, you know, we definitely lost connection with self and other and creator. But look at the technological medical breakthroughs. I mean, the standard of living is extraordinary. And so, like you were saying about trade-offs, you know, we have to take the good with the bad. I also think that we can reevaluate. But fathers leaving the farms 300 years ago to work in the factories in the cities and boys being raised by women who I actually got to spend the weekend with Alison Armstrong this past weekend and had lunch with her on Sunday. And, you know, her whole thing is men are not hairy, bad behaving women. They're a completely different order of being. And when mothers don't understand that, they castrate their sons. Because boys are rambunctious. They're rowdy. They're just rife with testosterone and they're, you know, figuring out their order in the pecking order, and they're pushing their boundaries and climbing trees and breaking shit. That's healthy. That's natural. We need boys like that because those are the boys that are going to get strong, confident, clear on what they want to do in the world and go out and do it. And they're good naturally by nature. They want to protect. They want to provide. They want to bond and do something great. But when we constantly shame and castrate boys for being that way, sit still, medicating them. Oh, don't even get me started with that.
That's crazy.
We create toxic swamp monsters, not in the toxic masculinity sense. That's not what I mean. What I mean is we mutate them. We distort their sense of self. We distort their sense of their capacity. We erode their confidence. We shame them into a box that they, you know, it's the thing I used to teach my daughter. You take an elephant and you tie a rope around its, you know, ankle and you drive a stake into the ground and the elephant just walks away with it. You know, it just pulls it right out of the ground. But you take a baby elephant who's not strong enough to pull it out, it'll pull and it'll pull and it'll pull and it'll pull and it'll give up. And then for the rest of its life, you can just hammer a stake in the ground and tie a rope to its leg and it's not going anywhere. And I would teach her that because I never wanted her to get stuck. It's like always pull, always test. And she does. She does. And it's just fun for me. I get a kick out of it. But I think most humans don't. We stop testing. We stop pushing the limits. We stop, you know, exploring the boundaries. And we just settle into a conveyor belt of a mediocre life and settle for, you know, I guess this is the best I can do. And it's not true.
So much of that is just probably just born out of the educational system too.
Yeah.
Where it's just ill suited to get the best out of everybody and to push them. It's just structurally not ideal for what the collective goals probably are of society.
I wonder, I mean, you know, again, there's the, you know, the American government gets what the American government wants. It just prints money until it does. And you know, I think that the schooling system, I don't call it the education system, because education means to draw forth from within. Schooling is sit in your seat, ingest this information. You know, I would have homeschooled my daughter if her mother and I were aligned. We, at the very least, we were aligned on Montessori, and I can't say enough good things about it. But I think that there's, you know, this gets back to purpose and our wiring. Montessori's whole thing is follow the child. You know, support the child to master what they're curious about. We're born with that innate sense. And then we get put into the boxes of the schooling system and told that that's not okay, and told that we can't be who we want to be, and told we got to be this way. And as men, you know, we grow up in that. And then 20, 30 years later, we're looking around saying, well, shit, I don't have to do anything right now. What do I want to do? I'm not even in touch with it. I don't even know. I've lost the spark. And that's what purpose mapping is designed specifically to excavate. And when men touch it again, they go, oh, are you kidding me? That's been there since I can remember, 3, 4, 5 years old. I remember being in this, and it just, it kind of comes back to you. It's never gone. It's just buried.
So the purpose mapping, Craig, is that all like a one-on-one coaching process? Is this a group thing, or?
I do both. You know, I've most of my clients for the past 15 years have paid me $25,000, $35,000, $50,000, upwards of, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars for men that stay in my program for years with me in private coaching. Part of my mission is I want to serve more men. And so I created a group program. I've created a just a 90-minute experience where I can take a man through, and in 90 minutes, he has that holy shit moment where he goes, okay, yeah, that's it. That's clearly it. It's not ambiguous. I have no questions. That is exactly what I was born to do. And then we can talk about what type of support would help them integrate that. And so there is a group program, and there is a new program that I'm just starting to roll out called purpose.ai that is part of the package I put together for your listeners.
So is that like an AI coach? That's like,
what is it? It's becoming that. Yeah. It's in beta mode right now.
Interesting.
And, you know, I'm going to train it on 100 sessions that I've done with men. And it just, you know, it's always the same session. It's just tailored to, you know, what that man's unique zone of genius is, but it gets to the heart of it every single time. And so I would like it to go around the world. I think we can do 100 million men. And so I use the high ticket coaching to fund that development of that, because it's quite a bit of work. It's a lot more work than I imagined. It's not just a GPT. I mean, there's a whole brain and the way that the memory works and keeping the whole thing secure and private. I mean, it's a lot of work in the back end, but that's what I'm working on. And that's the thing that gets me out of bed every morning. It's like, let's go. That's my second mountain.
Nice. You just mentioned that there was a, you were offering something to listeners, or?
Yeah. For me, you know, we're going to take the time, and for anybody that's listened this far, obviously there's some resonance. So I put together a special package with my team. I had them assemble what we're calling the Legacy Builder Blueprint, which consists of two things. But before I tell you what it is, let me just tell you who it's for. If you're a high achieving professional, or a creative visionary CEO, a maverick executive, or ironically, I work with a lot of military officers in civilian transition. I've actually got a guy who's leaving the Pentagon in about a year. It's just kind of crazy to me, because I don't really fit in that culture, but I have a lot of empathy for them and the transitions they're going through. They seem to like me, so we work together. But pretty much any man who's reached the top of his game or reached that midlife transition point where you find yourself spinning your wheels and you're looking for a proven framework that can help you wake up with that fire again, just clear on what's next. This is for those types of men. So there's two components to this. The first is the purpose.ai, which is the dashboard. It's literally the same thing that I take my $50,000 clients through. And it's going to help you clarify who you are, why you're here, and what to do about it. And like I said, it's in beta mode. So if you'd like a copy of it, happy to share it. My only request is you give us a little grace that it's not done yet, and also give us feedback and help us make it better. You know, join me in this mission of helping create a world where more men are living aligned with their mission and their purpose. The other thing is, I'm going to extend a personal invitation to an exclusive men's group where I coach famous high achievers, like former Apple executives, senior leaders at HBO, Amazon Prime. I did the CEO of 7-Eleven, and I did, there's a drummer named Kenny Aronoff. He's like world renowned. He tours with the Stones, Smashing Pumpkins. And every Wednesday, I coach a man like this in what I call the genius room. So think of it like a Joe Rogan podcast interview meets an executive life coaching session meets a strategic mastermind. So you'll be part of this mastermind and you'll watch me guide these men through the exact same struggles and challenges that you're facing to real clarity about what to do with the next chapter. So this isn't available anywhere else. It's invitation only for the types of men I described. And ultimately, it's going to help you go from stranded on top of Success Mountain to waking up with genuine purpose and direction again. So if you'd like that, if you're a man who's at the top of your game and you're ready for what's next, go to my Instagram at Purpose Mapping and DM me the word mindful. So it's specific only for this podcast. DM me mindful and I'll send you the Legacy Builder Blueprint. And my Instagram handle again is at Purpose Mapping. And I'll personally get you rolling and would be excited to hear how it goes for you.
Well, I appreciate that offer. That's very generous. And for the listeners, always grateful for your listening. I encourage you to check out what Craig's work has to offer for you. And if you're a woman listening and there's a man in your life that you think would benefit, then please send the conversation their way and maybe it's a good fit for them. Craig, I want to thank you for taking the time. It sounds like you put a lot into this and it sounds like it does a lot of good for a lot of people. And yeah, poked me a little bit to think about some questions more seriously and, you know, help maybe hold the mirror up for me in a way that maybe I need to pay a little bit more attention and focus on what I want to get out of my next whatever in my life. So I appreciate you doing that.
I'm just curious, Les, what are you taking away from this conversation? What's the major insight that you think will stick with you?
Well, I definitely think that I am clinging to some stories about how I use my time. You know, I think, like I said, I feel like I took it so seriously for so long that I've built up some barriers now that I need to like look at those narratives and be willing to let them dissolve probably. And, you know, not be afraid of like, I don't want to say failing, but like just changing my mind later if I do something and I, you know, but I think I need to take forward steps in some direction. I don't feel like a pressure to pick the perfect direction, but I do feel like I need to do something different than I've been doing.
That's the calling. And it takes you into the dark forest before it takes you to the trailhead of your second mountain.
Yeah, I'm probably somewhere in the forest now.
Yeah.
Darkest point. Maybe I gotta.
The cave you fear to enter holds the treasure that you seek, my man.
All right.
Keep me posted and, you know, check out the Purpose AI offer. You know, I'd love to just continue to support you in this. You know, now that we're connected, you're a man in my tribe and I'm just here to be of service and steward as many men forward as possible into doing something deeply meaningful that really fulfills your potential for contribution. I think that that's the hardest part is when men know that they're capable of so much more and they're sitting on a powder keg of potential and they just can't find the fuse. It's like, how do I get to this thing? And part of it is an organic process, but I do believe that consciously participating in it, bringing some rigor and some clear thinking to the process ensures that you don't just end up lost in the dark forest for the next couple decades and then you're in the nursing home and it's kind of doesn't matter anymore. You know, you've got a couple of good decades ahead of you.
I hope so.
Well, we all do, right? I mean, there's no guarantees, but right. When you're looking back from your deathbed, it's a question of are you going to feel, fuck yeah, that was awesome, or I could have done better.
Right. Well, some good food for thought. Thanks again for the offering. I really appreciate it, and I'm glad you reached out. It is a good time for me, like I said. And again, for the listeners, thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. Everybody have a great day.